Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. After 18 months of work and one previous set of public meetings, the Arkansas River Infrastructure Task Force now has a draft proposal for funding a series of low-water dams on the Arkansas River. This $298 million proposal calls for three new low-water dam sites, one at Sand Springs, one at South Tulsa Jinks, and another at Bixby, as well as a rebuild of the existing Zinc low-water dam. There will also be a maintenance and operations fund to maintain the facilities, as well as money for levee rehabilitation. The Tulsa County levees have been deemed among the most at-risk systems around the country. These improvements would be funded by a 0.3 penny sales tax that is currently being levied as a part of Vision 2025 and would run from 2017 to December 2027 and would be only levied in the communities that would benefit from this development: Tulsa, Sand Springs, Jinks, Bixby, and unincorporated areas of the county adjacent to the river. Well, my guest today is the task force chairman, G.T. Bynum, a District 9 Tulsa City Councilor. A series of public meetings are ongoing, and you can see a schedule at tulsacouncil.org. G.T. Bynum is my guest today. G.T. Bynum, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks
Thank
very much
for having
me.
Over
the last 18 months, you've led the Arkansas River Infrastructure Task Force looking at this long debate we've had in the city about whether to get water in the river or not, and developing the river's economic development, recreation, and aesthetics. We've been talking about this for many years. Why is this the right time to put a plan into development?
Yeah, no, you're right. We have been talking about this for years, really ever since the Keystone Dam was built. Before then, you actually had a river that had water in it, but it flooded routinely, and so they built Keystone Dam, and now we have the other extreme where we just have generally a sandy, empty riverbed, but we don't have flooding anymore, so it's a trade-off. About 18 months ago, a group of us from a bunch of different communities got together really with a level of frustration, because this is one of those things that when you go to other communities around the country and see cities that are trying to revitalize, they're searching for those things they can do that will put them on the map that could be a real game changer for them. And for us, our city was built right next to that game changer and has been staring us in the face for now 50 years as an empty riverbed. And over the last 10, 15 years, the focus has been, well, let's come up with local matching funds at the local level and then hope that the federal government will do this for us. And that has not come to pass. And then the strategy was, well, let's hope that the state government will do this for us. And that didn't come to pass either. And so we decided, you know what, let's quit waiting for somebody else to do this for us. If we were just going to say, we're going to do it ourselves, we're going to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps and pay for it ourselves, here's what it would cost and here's what it would look like. And that sounds like a fairly straightforward, simple question, but we spent about a year and a half developing the answer to that question. And that's where we are with the proposal that we've developed and that our task force has adopted as a draft proposal to take out and visit with our neighbors about.
So what made this so difficult?
You know, the challenge is, I think, a few things. One, you're dealing with really complex engineering situations here. You're not talking about building one dam. In this case, we're talking about four of them, each of which has its own challenges and opportunities. And that are part of a very complex waterway system on the Arkansas River. Beyond that, there's also the legal issues of how can a group of communities along the river band together and call an election and pay for something just those communities, not in a countywide vote, which is one of the reasons we believe this hasn't been approved by voters in the past. Because folks in Broken Arrow and Owosso who don't benefit from it as much as people from Tulsa, Jinks, or Sand Springs do were being asked to pay for it and voted against it, not surprisingly. How can we avoid that? We really wanted to look at what are the things that were problematic in the past and then avoid those. And so one of them was having a countywide vote. How could we not do a countywide vote? Another one was that proposals in the past were not necessarily put together in a public specific way. When I hold town hall meetings and ask people, well, who here voted against the river proposal of 2007? When hands shoot up, I ask them, well, why'd you vote against it? 9 times out of 10, the answer is because I didn't like the idea of building islands in the middle of the Arkansas River when that wasn't what was on the ballot. But it was so poorly defined that people didn't know. They didn't have a role in putting it together. So how can we do this completely transparently? How can we have all of these be public meetings? And how can we come up with a really specific proposal? And that got into, you know, about a year ago, we thought we were ready to go. We held town hall meetings a year ago and went out and presented our findings and had a lot of people come out and start asking detailed questions that we didn't have good answers to.
What sort of detailed questions?
What kind of money do you have in this for environmental mitigation? What kind of money do you have in this for shoreline stabilization? What's the time frame on when the dams will be built? What do you have in here for operations and maintenance? All of those were things that we had not thought through at a level that we felt comfortable going out and asking people to pay for. And so I'm really proud of that people on the task force, you know, we've got the city of Tulsa, city of Jinx, city of Sand Springs, city of Bixby, Tulsa County, the Creek Nation, and the business community have all been on this group for a year and a half working on this. And we all agreed, you know what? People have been trying to do this for half a century. We're not going to rush it. We'll pull back and do our homework. And it took us another year to get it right, but we feel comfortable about where we are today.
You know, when you look at other cities around the country that have developed their riverfronts, a lot of cities are built on rivers. It's natural. And in their early days, that becomes the haven of industry.
Yes.
A lot of riverfronts, that industry has morphed and changed. They don't need the river anymore. That becomes defunct. Here in Tulsa, we have a riverfront that is still very much industrially viable. You have two refineries along the banks. How does that impact the whole thing?
We're really fortunate in, I think, the opinion of our task force in that in Tulsa and in the corridor as it goes through it, the different communities that are involved, we have a lot of parkland that we've lucked into being there. And I don't say that as in that presents a development opportunity. I say that as in that is something that leverages the asset of having water in there. We don't have a bunch of blight on both sides of the river that we're going to have to say, okay, well, we're going to build low water dams, and then we're going to have to go and tear down a bunch of warehouses and do a bunch of environmental remediation on all that. No such case. We have beautiful natural settings on the sides, on the banks of the river. It's just that what's in the middle of the river looks terrible. And so what can we do to better leverage those assets? When we look at, we've talked about development here, we've really left that to each individual community. You know, we didn't think people in Tulsa should be telling Jinx how to develop Jinx. And so we left that up to each community. But in Tulsa, I can tell you, we're really looking at very targeted places for development where it won't harm river parks, where river parks really serves to better leverage the asset that we would have by having water in the river.
And of course, right now the city is the Kaiser Foundation is building a huge park on the river.
Well, and you asked earlier, I mean, that speaks to, you know, what's different this time. And I think one of the big differences this time that we haven't had in the past is that we have actual development occurring. It is not a mistake that the largest public park gift in the history of the United States of America is going in the only space on the river in our community where there is water impounded. The Creek Nation is investing $400 million in a facility in the hope that there will be water in the river out there. That's just two examples. $750 million in private investment from both of them in just two spots. So we view it as, you know, those are great examples of the types of development and assets that could occur for our community in very focused places if we're willing to have water there that lures that type of development.
I want to ask about something you said earlier when we were talking about the fact that with the construction of Keystone Dam, we now have seasonal flows in the river. The Arkansas River is a prairie river, and that's sort of the natural state of the river. It's going to flood at certain times. It's going to have very low water. It's going to have meandering channels. It's going to have sandbars that shift around from season to season. How are you going to protect that side of the environment of the river with this proposal?
Yes, well, that's a great question, one we spent a lot of time on. You know, first, the Arkansas, as it runs through Tulsa, it was a prairie river for all of history up until the time that Keystone Dam was built. Now it is essentially a hydropower generation runoff canal, with the exception of flood events like we've had over the last month. But for the other 11 months out of most years, it is simply a stream where water is released once a day to generate power from Keystone, and it comes through Tulsa in the middle of the night when nobody's out there to see it except the occasional perfectly sober fisherman who happens to be caught out in the middle of the river channel when that surge comes through. But the way we designed this was very intentional. And your question really speaks to one thing that we've got to get over, is the hurdle of people imagining this in their minds, that we're saying, well, we're going to build a dam and then it's going to be a solid lake from Bixby to Keystone. And that is not the case. What it does is create a series of lakes, each of which is about 2 to 3 miles in length. And in between, you will still have shallow, narrower in some places, just depending on where the sand shifts, river, similar to what you would see today, but probably with a little more depth going across for reasons we can get to later in the interview. But that is intentionally designed, one, to have a, you know, minimize the impact on the environment as the habitat as it exists out there right now. But also so that in the event that you do have a flood situation, you have space in between those lakes that can handle that increased water flow. Another thing that we did in the design of the dams themselves is a real change from what those of us in Tulsa who are used to zinc dam are accustomed to, which zinc dam is basically two gates on one side, one gate on the other. In the middle, 95% of that is just a concrete wall that water goes over when it gets high enough. Our proposal has gates running all the way across the dam that have the ability for the gates to then go down and lay flat on the riverbed. And so the engineers that we had designed this tell us it would actually make us safer from a flood control standpoint than we are today with zinc dam there, because you're allowing more water to pass through. That also helps with silt, flushing silt through, and a lot of other things as far as fish passage and other things like that.
Another issue with low water dams, and it was we used to have two low water dams in our system. One was at Sand Springs, and I think one of the reasons that low water dam was destroyed was because it was dangerous.
That's exactly right.
And it was, if you were below the dam when water came up, it had a horrible tendency for, if you were in that water, you wouldn't be able to get out of that water. Now, are you redesigning the low water dams you're proposing to be more safe for fishermen and people in the stream?
Yes. The zinc dam as it exists today would not be allowed to be built. And the reason is, if you're looking at it, you know, the water, that concrete wall I talked about, water cascades over that, and it looks really beautiful. But what you don't see is underneath there's basically a turbine that gets created. The water is circulating down there. And even if you have a life jacket and you're out there, it'll suck you under and drown you. And so the design that we have on each of these dams, what it does is downstream from the gates that go down, there's a series of steps. And what that does is disperse that energy from that turbine effect so that people don't get sucked under. The other thing that we found from talking with people in Sand Springs and with the Corps of Engineers is that a lot of the deaths they had on that dam in Sand Springs was because they didn't have a pedestrian bridge on it. They had a dam, but no bridge. And so people that wanted to fish would either walk out on the dam structure itself or below it, as you mentioned, and either fall off the dam or get sucked under. And so the design for the Sand Springs Dam, the Zinc Dam, for each of our dams, they have pedestrian bridges incorporated into them.
Well, let's talk about the four dam sites. One will be just west of the 97 bridge over the Arkansas, a fairly close location to where that old low water dam was.
Yes.
And each one of these dams are going to have their own sort of niche.
That's correct.
So what's the niche for the Sand Springs Dam?
The niche for the Sand Springs Dam is that it gives us control over the release of water. Instead of us being at the mercy of the Army Corps of Engineers on when they release water from Keystone Dam, the Sand Springs Dam has the ability to build up water storage and then release that water over the course of a whole day. So right now, we get one surge from Keystone for 3 or 4 hours, and then it stops. Then the next day, another surge for 3 or 4 hours, and then it stops. what we would be able to do with the Sand Springs Dam is build up that water storage and then be releasing water all day long, which increases the quality of the water, but it also creates more of the type of river that one would expect to see passing through the community as a whole.
And that lake will probably be the largest lake, right?
It would be the deepest because it has to hold that water storage. You're looking at the depth of the water itself, anywhere from 8 to 12 feet, depending on where those releases are over the course of a day.
And you really expect navigable boating on that lake?
That's correct.
For fishing and
yes.
the like?
Yes. That's one of the other big things that I think is a challenge for us in talking with folks about this. There are different things that appeal to the different communities about each dam. So for the folks in Sand Springs, they could really care less about the water releases. They care about the fact that they get a great lake. For those of us in Tulsa, though, we could probably have less of a care, maybe is a nicer way of saying it, about the lake they get in Sand Springs. But the important thing about that dam to us in Tulsa is that it's creating a flow of water through our community all day long that we have control over. So that's the niche there.
You know, and so the zinc dam will be rehabilitated.
Zinc dam would be, the foundation of the dam would remain, but otherwise it would be torn out and replaced. It would be raised about 4 feet in height. So the lake would hold more water. It'd have more depth. You'd have gates running all the way across, which would allow a lot of that silt that's formed in there to be flushed out. And then the other factor that we've built into the zinc dam is a whitewater flume on the east side, which we think will be a great recreational attraction for
and
that
And, of course, at one point that was a real sort of guerrilla event where people would whitewater along the PSO.
That's correct. Yeah. No, that was sort of good old boy whitewatering there. This is an actual flume like you would see real professional whitewater activists using.
Yeah. And that'll be at the zinc site. And of course, there the niche is sort of more like aesthetics of just having water in the Midtown area for people who want to just run by the lake and have that nice breeze coming off the water. And also, I assume there's going to be some crew and rowing and things like
yes,
that.
Yes, that's the thing. We're adding 4 feet of depth to that lake. So you'll have the ability for water-based recreation on that lake. And then, of course, you'll have arguably the finest public park in America right there next to it.
Yeah. The next site will be south of the Creek Turnpike.
And about 103rd and Riverside.
Yeah, 103rd and Riverside. Now, this is planned as a planned recreation lake.
Yes.
For water taxis that'll be going from the casino over to the various commercial developments. It'll probably be the most commercially developed lake of the four.
The available land potential for development is the greatest on the South Tulsa Jinx Dam of the ones in Tulsa that we've discussed. The opportunities there, both for great parks and for commercial development, are significant. But yes, you're correct. That would be another one where you would have a lot of opportunities for recreation and development on both sides. And that lake would be built, that dam would be built at approximately 103rd and Riverside and would extend to about 81st to 71st, depending on the water releases and depending on which side of the lake you're on. And then the space in between that lake and the dam for zinc, that's about 3.5-4 miles we're talking about. That is an area that really, in my opinion, of all of them, probably benefits the most from having those releases from the Sand Springs Dam, because you're going to have water running through that area all the time, not at a great depth. We're talking a foot probably max on the depth in that space. But you will have water passing through there, which will create a much better aesthetic than we have right now.
And the final dam will be down just east of the Memorial Bridge in Bixby.
Yes, and that's the fourth dam we're considering as one, and the one that you mentioned in Bixby.
And this is perhaps the biggest one because the river gets really wide at this point. It's much wider than it is earlier.
Yeah, we took a couple different shots on the design for that dam simply because of the unique nature of the channel there and the other challenges they have on the shoreline. But their focus there will be very much as a recreational attraction. That lake will not be as deep as the other ones. The dam will not be as high. But it will create a great recreational and aesthetic attraction.
My guest today is G.T. Bynum, a District 9 counselor and chair of the Arkansas River Infrastructure Task Force. They have a draft funding proposal, which would total $298 million. It would take the existing portion of the full Vision 2025?
No.
It's a portion of the Vision 2025.
Yes. It's the proposal we've put forward, you know, the existing Vision 2025 sales tax is 0.6 cents. This would be 0.3 cents, so half of that, and would need to run for 11 years.
Now, the other part of it, $30 million is going to be spent on not only creating an endowment for maintenance, which I think is important because when you look at zinc today, you see anytime the water's even remotely low, you just see how much sediment is built up behind the dam. Now, you said the new design will reduce that, but anytime you have low water dams, you're going to have sediment build up. And part of the plan requires maintenance for sediment removal on a regular basis.
This is, from a nerdy government standpoint, which I'm into, one of the more exciting parts of the whole proposal because it's completely new. We could not, you know, usually when you're putting something like this together or any other proposal at a city level, you look to find some other city that's done it well, and then you just rip off their idea. We do that all the time. What is it? Steve Jobs's line about great artists steal. Yeah. That's sort of what we try to do. On this, there is no other city in America that has done what we're proposing here, which is to create an endowment that would cover permanently the operations and the maintenance and the replacement necessary for components on each of the dams for their lifetime. So that we wanted people to be able to go out, we wanted to be able to tell our neighbors, if you vote for this, you will have the comfort of knowing that it will be properly operated, properly maintained, and you won't be asked for another dime for it.
That's pretty rare for government. Usually government's about building the thing, not necessarily maintaining it.
Everything else that we do, the implicit notion in it is that you're going to be asked later. You know, every street that we fix today, somebody 30, 40 years from now is going to be asked to fix it again because we don't have an endowment to permanently maintain our street system or anything else. And we're very fortunate in the philanthropic community that we have here in Tulsa who are accustomed to designing and developing endowments. And Councillor Lakin has really been the leader on this on the council, who's also the CEO of the Tulsa Community Foundation, in setting this up so that people can have confidence it's going to be properly operated, properly maintained. When we talked with engineers about what are the great risks of building dams, each of them said that's the number one thing, is that you build it with no plan to maintain it and it gets run down and your costs are tremendous.
Yeah. You also have some money set aside for levee rehabilitation. We've been hearing a lot about the state of the West Tulsa levees and some of the other levees as well, but really the West Tulsa levees first and foremost. They're not in great shape. They need about $35 million worth of repairs, $4.2 million in this proposal. Why that number and why not more? I know there's a 65-35 match involved with this, with the federals, hopefully. But
yes. You know, we discussed the levee issue a lot because the engineers tell us that the construction of these low water dams will not have an impact on the levees. You won't have water resting on the levees or rushing by the levees or harming the levees in any way. But we still agreed as a group that the levees are a critical issue in the Arkansas River Corridor, and we wanted to do something to help address it. And so looking at the funds, the city of Tulsa has already allocated $3 million for levee improvements. The levee district itself has about $1.4 million, and they're generating about $350,000 a year in surplus money to go towards improvements. And then the federal government has a clear interest there, particularly as it relates to the levees around the refineries. That's a national security issue. So that the numbers that we were given by the levee commissioner were that they have a current estimate of $34 million in need. That means there needs to be 35% of that needs to come from a local cost share, which is about $12 million. The city of Tulsa has its money. The levy district would be picking up half of that cost. And then that's where we came up with what's left after that, after the city of Tulsa's money spent, after the levy district, which actually owns the levies, has spent its half. The remainder is $4.2 million. And that's how our task force came up with that number. Now, I know there are some folks who would like to see that number be higher. And that's why we're doing the town hall meetings right now, to get feedback and hear what people think.
And that's also contingent on the federal government coming in with the 65-35 match. Now,
it is.
And I know a lot of times that money on the federal level is given towards levee systems that are damaged from flooding events as opposed to a maintenance event. So that would be another issue to confront.
Yeah. In a previous life, I handled Corps of Engineers appropriations for Senator Nichols. And I can tell you, and I told my colleagues on the task force, one of the great factors in getting Corps of Engineers funding from headquarters for a project out in the field is that the local cost share is there and available. And so we all agree that it's important that the local funds be available. That's why we put money in this at all. The $4.2 million that we've already agreed to is the single largest amount ever pledged towards this effort by any local government or governmental stakeholder. But like I said, I think there's room for more discussion there before this goes to a ballot.
And when the proposal is going towards a ballot, you're looking at a 0.3% sales tax in only the communities affected. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because we found that, one, it is fundamentally unfair to ask Broken Arrow and Owosso to pay for dams that don't benefit them to the same degree they do those of us along the river. Now, in the past, the only way that the communities along the river could band together and call a vote where they were all in it was to do a countywide vote. Fortunately, the state legislature has since passed a law that allows those communities to band together and call one vote within an economic development district. So that is the approach that we have, that we take into consideration in the proposal that our task force put together. So you would have a district that would be formed from Sand Springs, Jinx, Tulsa, Bixby, and then there are some unincorporated areas there that Tulsa County would play a part in as well, banding along that corridor so that those of us who benefit from it the most are the ones who pay for it.
Before we leave, I want to ask you, you've spent 18 months on this issue. What's the most interesting thing you've learned during the course of this 18 months about the river and how we make it work?
Oh, man. There have been so many interesting things that we've learned on this, but I don't know that they would be interesting to other people.
Just to you personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Given your wonkish nature.
Yes. No, I think we've learned a ton about the history of the river as it goes through our community and the different ways it's been utilized. But I would say probably that the most interesting thing to me has just been the dynamics that have brought together all of these different stakeholders who have not historically worked together well. All you have to do is look at what's going on at the jail to see how well the city of Tulsa and Tulsa County and other communities work together on a contentious issue. That has been an embarrassment. The flip side here has been we've all worked together incredibly well on this because we're all passionate about it and we all see the upside in different ways from different standpoints for each of our communities. We can pull together and we can work together and we can find win-win solutions when you have the people in place that want to do that.
G.T. Bynum is a District 9 Tulsa City Councilor and the chair of the Arkansas River Infrastructure Task Force, which has a draft proposal out to fund a series of low-water dams on the Arkansas River. A series of public meetings in the city of Tulsa are ongoing. You can see a schedule at tulsacouncil.org. The next meeting is scheduled for this coming Monday at Rudisill North Regional Library. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you haven't checked out our website, we have a brand new website at publicradiotulsa.org. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.